Erev Tov, and thank you very much to the Hornsteins for hosting us again. We're approaching Hanukkah. And Hanukkah, so we know we have a mitzvah to light Hanukkiah, menorah, and Chazal say our mitzvah is ner ishu beito. Every person with their family is going to light. Rav Harlap has an interesting thought. He says, you go outside, you light, for those who go outside and light, and then you come back inside. You come back to the house. In other words, there's a job to light up the world, and then there's a central theme of coming back home and bringing that light into the house. Chazal tell us, Hazahir b'ner, if a person's careful with the lights that they light, so then they're going to have children who are Talmidei Chachamim. And Rashi on the Gemara right away tells us which candles is it talking about. It's talking about the candles of Hanukkah and the candles of Shabbat. What's unique about these two? The two are opposites. On Shabbat, we light candles to make the house beautiful, to enjoy the candles. On Hanukkah, we light candles, and we're not going to use those candles. They're exact opposites, Hanukkah and Shabbos, the lights you're lighting. But when we light those lights, Hanukkah is near Ishu Beito, and the Shabbos candles is the wife lighting the candles, right? So we have very, very different roles in these candles. But when we light them, the way Chazal told us, where Chazal said, enjoy the candles, we enjoy the candles. Where Chazal said, don't benefit from the candles. So then Chazal say, a person will have children who light up the world. The theme of Hanukkah is Ish U Beito, the home. And when we speak about Chinuch, we're talking about the home. The concept of Ish U Beito appears first in Bereishis. We're going to read about it in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. When Yaakov Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim, it says, Ishu Veito Bao. Yaakov comes down as a family. And the Medrash says, even the youngest child was set up with a shidduch. They all had to go into Mitzrayim as a family. So the idea of Hanukkah begins in the home. The Medrash says, not the Medrash, it says in Yosifun, and it says it also in Sefer Makkabim, and the Rambam quotes it, they forced every Jew to take the door off their front door, meaning the homes lost their privacy. And then it says, they had every Jew engraved into the horn of their ox, Enni chelek b'lokei Yisrael, I have no portion in the God of Israel. And Rav Lau explains why the horn of their ox. So he says that was the baby bottle back then. The Gemara in Shabbos discusses the idea that they used to nurse the babies with the horns of the animals. That was the baby bottle. So he says from the time a child was nursing, they wanted him to see engraved in his baby bottle, Ein lanu chelek b'lokei Yisrael. That was the idea of having them engrave it there. So when we begin talking about chinuch, we're starting from the baby bottle. And we're going to start tonight with a topic that I did not want to discuss so soon, but everyone keeps this asking for it, so we're going to talk about it a little bit, and that is boundaries and discipline. And let's first analyze why we don't like discipline. Why does everyone want a class on it, but no one wants to do it? And that's because we all want to love, and we all want to be loved. And no one likes conflict. And especially women, Hashem created them, that they have a greater tendency to look for peace, to find the common ground. Or the way my wife put it, we want our kids to want to go to sleep on time. Right? No one wants to have to force them. I'm saying you want... So conflict is hard for everyone, and it's even harder for women. It's fairly common that a couple will have a heated argument, and at one point the wife's going to say, why do you yell at me? And the husband thinks, I didn't raise my voice. But that's because there's a greater desire. Hashem created women with a much greater desire and need to give love and to receive love. And so the second we have to face a situation which can be perceived differently, or call it conflict, so then it becomes very hard. So what we're going to discuss firstly, and I don't know if we're going to move beyond that, is why there's even a need for boundaries and discipline, and how we should view boundaries and discipline. And I think that working off of that, we can approach the question of what tools to use. But the real question is, why do we need it? Can't the kids just like let them do their thing? So we all work within frameworks. A person has a job. He's in high tech, and his boss walks into the room and says, I want you to clean the toilets. So he's going to look at him and say, that's not my job, right? So we have frameworks, and we expect a certain duality. I'm going to live up to my end. You're going to live up to your end. We always work within frameworks. In marriage, couples decide how they're going to make decisions, what they're going to do about finance, questions of chinuch. So the ideal is a scenario where the child comes and says, can I go to a friend tonight? And the father says, let's ask your mother. And the mother says, let's ask your father. And each one works with the other one, not to avoid the question, right? There are those parents who send the kid like a ping pong ball back and forth because neither one wants to decide. But a better situation is where we make decisions together, where each one gives the other one the space for expression. But at the end of the day, we do decide on a framework within which we're going to work. When it comes to the framework of the relationship between a parent and a child, so parents should be listening, right? Every parent should have some time to hear their kids. But as a parent, we should listen. As a child, they must listen. There's a big difference. And I want to begin maybe with a few extreme stories that I had the fortune, or good or bad fortune, you'll decide, to be privy to. But they didn't happen here on the Yishuv. Okay, so no one should think anything about our Yishuv. There was a family where... we'll start with the most innocent story. The mother asks the child, please pick up the toys. And the child looks at the mother and says, no. Okay. Now what are you going to do? Do you want to get there? There's the story of the child who, I don't know what the mother asked him, but he was already a teenager. And he stood up and said, I'm not doing it. Force me. How can you force me? So he's bigger than the mother, and the mother can't force him. And then there's the child who decided that his mother had asked him one too many times to clean the bedroom. So he got up and violently approached her and then took her arm and twisted it behind her back and pinned her against the wall and said, what are you going to do now? So you're going to tell me to clean the room? So the parents called and asked whether they should kick the kid out of the house. But I want us to recognize that frameworks are important, meaning... the children need to understand there are limits. So we're not dealing with teenagers. We're not dealing with situations like this. And we daven, we should never get there. But when we establish a certain framework in a home, and no one has a guarantee where they'll go. I'm not coming to say that if we do it right now, then everything will work out right. There are many variables. What movies you let your kid watch, if you let them watch. What friends you let your kids have, who they hang out with. There are many factors. It's not one factor. But there is a framework. There is an atmosphere in the home that we give our children. And one of the components of that framework is the question of discipline. We use discipline. Discipline is the framework. It's not the chinuch itself. Sometimes it is. Sometimes you have to teach a child. There is a framework. Not anything goes. But most of the time, you want to set up boundaries that you're not fighting to enforce. The children will push them sometimes, but they have to exist. Now, what your boundaries are, that's something you have to decide on. For some parents, it's cute if the child says no. I'm not sure they're making a good decision on that. Some parents think it's funny when a child hits them. I'm not sure they're making a good decision on that, but that's part of people's choices on where they set their boundaries in their chinuch. To my mind, even a three-year-old can understand you don't hit an ima. And I think that the way we respond when a child crosses a boundary has to be different than the way we respond when a child doesn't clean their room. You should not be scary because your child didn't clean the room. You should be scary if your child hit you or decided they're playing with matches or ran into the street because they were upset at you. There are things where you say, hey, you can't do that. That's a no. There are things where you say, I want you to do differently. Okay, we spend our whole day wanting our kids to do certain things differently, and they keep surprising us how they can do it different than we thought they could, would do it, right? A parent once walks into the bathroom, and the child has the sheepish grin. So they say, what are you doing? So the child says, I've been doing the surprise for you all week. You haven't noticed? So the parent goes, no. So the child goes, I've been cleaning the toilets every day. You didn't notice? So the parent goes, no. And then the parent looks and sees that the child has a toothbrush in their hand. So they weren't exactly expecting that one. So children surprise us. But we have a responsibility to establish boundaries. Let's take a few examples, but maybe let's first look at what Chazal tell us. The first Midrash, we have two types of Midrashim in Chazal. There's Midrashei Agadah that tells stories, and then there are Midrashei Halacha, where Chazal told us based on the Psukim, they told us many, many halachic concepts. So the beginning of the Midrash Halacha, called Michilta, that's the first Midrash on Shmos, begins with Agadic discussion. And the Midrash discusses Yishmael and Avshalom. So Avram Avinu was wealthy, and Avram Avinu wanted children, and when he finally had a child, Yishmael, says the Midrash, again, this is a Midrash, this is, we're quoting something that was written 2,000 plus years ago. So the Midrash says, Avram spoiled Yishmael, because Avram had wanted children for so long, so when Avram finally had Yishmael, it says he didn't give him the limits he should have given him. And the Midrash says that's why Avram ultimately saw Yishmael develop the way he did, because he did not give him limits. And the Midrash says a similar thought about Avshalom. It says, David loved Avshalom, and the words of the Pasuk is, "Velo atzavo aviv miyamav lemo madu akacha asita." His father never pained him. Lo atzavo aviv. He never told him, why'd you do that? So he never put him on the spot, and so he ended up being the one who tried killing David. He led a rebellion where most of Israel sided with Avshalom, and David's life was in danger, and then his pilakshim were violated. So there is a fallacy that's really been around for decades now. Parents are very concerned to keep their children happy. And we have to focus on real happiness. We have to focus on long-term happiness. A parent can't be concerned that the child's going to say, I hate you, mommy. And it's not a chinuch issue if the child says it. What are they supposed to say? You know, so a mother might want to go and cry when she hears the child say that. But maybe you had to do what you had to do in chinuch. I remember the first time we had, I don't remember what it was, but we had something serious in chinuch with one of the kids. And I called my mother and I asked, did you ever cry after you yelled at a child? And my mother said to me, are you kidding? You know, I would cry more than you cried. I said, no, I didn't know. We never knew that. There are situations where, as a parent, you have to be tough with the child, and then you go off into your own bedroom, and you're more miserable than the child is, because you had to be tough with the child. But that doesn't mean that you can run away from your responsibility as a parent and set limits to your child. There's no one else that's going to do the job for you. One of the challenges we see today is we're dealing with adults that never had limitations set on themselves. So a man could come to a line and cut the line. And people ask him, why are you cutting the line? And his answer is, I'm in a rush. So you look at him and you say, so you're in a rush, but there are other people here in line. And he doesn't even understand what you want from him. So why? Because he probably grew up and no one ever told him, you know, there's a system you have to adhere to and your needs are not the only thing that counts. So we're a generation that very often parents feel like they have to give their children all of their needs. And that's not true. You have to supply your children's basic needs as best as you can, And after that, you also have to teach them frameworks and responsibilities, which means they're not always going to get what they want. And that means there are going to be times that they pout, and there are going to be times that they nag, and there are going to be times that they're going to do everything under the sun to make you aware that they are not pleased with your decision. And that's okay. You have to be able to live up to it. And sometimes in these scenarios, it's good to send the kid to your husband. Husbands do better with this. It's like, so you make up in advance what he's going to answer, but it's not a bad move. Let him deal. Husbands have an easier time telling, men have an easier time telling kids, we discussed this twice already. Why are you bringing it up again? For mothers, somehow this is a hard thing to hold on to. Children don't have anyone else that will give them what a parent can give them. And here I want to touch on a few things that parents can give that no one else will give. One is setting boundaries. When parents don't set boundaries, children very often learn things the hard way. And they learn it by getting fired. They learn it by destroying their relationships and marriage. When children don't grow up with healthy boundaries, so then they become spoiled people as adults as well. So that's one thing we give them as parents. But there are other things. A parent is not a friend. A parent is much bigger than a friend. A parent will have faith in the child even when all his friends think that he's a failure. A parent should have. The Gemara tells us Yossi ben Yoezer was not like that. The Gemara says he thought his son was a complete failure. His son couldn't learn, so he didn't believe in his son. He was very wealthy, and so he took all his wealth and dedicated it to the Beis HaMikdash. He said, I'm not leaving it for a son who doesn't learn Torah. And Chazal were not pleased with him. Chazal say that he should have had faith in his son. He shouldn't have gauged his son on one parameter and said, if I'm a big Talmud Chacham and he isn't, then forget it. There's no reason to leave him my wealth. And so Chazal purposely tell us the continuation of the story, that his son was extraordinarily successful, and his son gave to the Beis HaMikdash more than his father had. It's as though Chazal are saying, you see, don't look at life that way. But our job as parents is to continue believing in a child where other people might not. Other people might lose patience in a child. There's a rule which we discussed in the past, and it's an important rule in Chinuch. Parents usually make their biggest mistakes in chinuch when their decisions are impure. Sometimes parents do something out of guilt. Sometimes a parent realizes maybe this isn't the right answer to the child, but I feel guilty not doing it. Sometimes parents make decisions out of fear. Sometimes parents are needy and they want to feel loved by the child. All of these things are normal, but when our chinuch isn't pure, we make wrong decisions. We can compensate for certain things. I had a chavrusa that was, we learned together. Every day we learned together during the lunch break. I ate lunch before him, he'd go eat lunch, and come up and join me for a 20-minute learning session. I learned with him, I thought, as a chesed. So I saw that he had a cleft lip. He was born, he had a deformity in his face. So I thought it must be difficult for him to get a chavrusa. So I figured I'll offer him to learn with him, fine. And the way the learning worked was every day I would show up first because I ate earlier. I'd take out the svarim. We finished the learning. I'd leave them for him to put back. I thought that was fair. We're learning until Pesach. And then after the Pesach break, we start our learning again. And we're in the middle of Sfiras HaOmer. We're in the middle of learning. And I look down, and I see a prosthetic hand on his lap. So I'm thinking, Pesach break was 1 month. Could he have been in an accident during that month? What happened? I'm saying he's got a prosthetic. That's not a real hand. So I'm sitting there, and for the rest of the Seder, he's talking and I'm not listening. I'm just thinking, that hand, what just happened? And I'm trying to figure it out. And I couldn't believe it, so I went to a mutual friend, a roommate of his, and I said, you know he has a prosthetic hand. So the guy says to me, yeah. I said, what happened? He says, I don't know. I said, how long has it been that way? He said, since I know him. So I started realizing I've been learning with this guy for 6 months, and I didn't realize. Now, when you come to Merkaz Arav and you have piles of svarim, and you have to take two svarim and put them in the shelf, and you have one hand, how are you going to move those svarim and put the sefer in? I suddenly felt like a dunce. These whole 6 months, I always left them with the pile to put back. How hard that must have been for him. And I never thought twice about it. Turns out the guy was born with one hand. And he's so talented that I never knew it. I mean, he fixes electronics with one hand. I don't know if we can imagine that. You can't hold the item with your other hand, right? There's the prosthetic sitting here, and he has to work with a screwdriver, fixing things, and he does. He plays music. He types. He's a pro in computers. And when it came... What? He needs a shidduch. Yeah. More than one girl agreed to marry him already, but he wasn't interested. Now, I called his mother when he started dating, and I asked her what she could tell me about him. So one of the things she told me was how frightening it was when he was a child to let him ride a bike, to learn how to ride a bike. But she knew that if she loved him and she wanted to do what was right for him, she's going to let him fall. She said, I'd stand there by the window crying, watching as he's trying to ride the bike with one hand, and asking myself, is he ever going to figure out how to balance himself with one hand? And I knew the only way he could grow up being normal and successful was if I let him fall, if I let him experience things his way. So I can't imagine what it's like to be a mother under such circumstances. But the lesson to me, over the years, I volunteered at Ohel Children's Home. I volunteered with handicapped kids, and I've had different experiences. And what I found was that those parents that were willing to hold themselves like this mother did and do what was right for the child, those parents, their kids became real big success stories, because real chinuch involves doing what's right for the child. And sometimes we feel bad. We feel bad for the child, but is it good for the child if we're not going to let them fall? Today they call it helicopter parenting. Parents are always there so the child doesn't fall. But if he doesn't fall, he won't learn. So in our chinuch, we have to ask ourselves, what's going to be good for this child long term? And that's, as we discussed the first time we met, our chinuch is about helping the child long term. Most of chinuch is long term decisions. Now, it could be for the long term benefit of the child. Tonight, he has to go to sleep on time. Because tonight and tomorrow night and the next night, he has to go to sleep on time. But our decisions in chinuch have to stem from a long-term perspective. And when we take on a long-term perspective, so then some things are non-issues and some things are more important. But the key that we were discussing is the idea of being pure in our chinuch. Our interest has to be what's right for the child. It sounds obvious, it's not. Let's take an example. It's bedtime. And the easier route in bedtime is let the child wear himself down and go to sleep. But if I'm going to let the child wear himself down and dance on the bed and do whatever they want to, they're going to get to bed at 10, 11, 12. I mean, they're going to get to bed pretty late. And then tomorrow, they're going to be cranky. And then they're going to be less successful in their studies. So right now, it's easier for me to pull back and say, I'm not going to fight you. But if I want to do what's right for the child, then I do have to set some kind of boundary. I do have to set some type of limit. So we all need boundaries. And let's again start with an example that's not our children. The Snapple was an iced tea company. And they were doing really, really well. And then they got a new CEO. And they flopped miserably. And after a year or two that their stocks plummeted, so the CEO removed himself. And when he had an interview, So they asked him a bunch of questions. And at one point he said, they asked him, what was your biggest mistake? So he said, my biggest mistake was not listening to my wife. So they asked him, what do you mean? So he said, when I was offered the job, my wife told me not to take it. I should have listened to her. Sometimes the best thing you can do for your spouse is to say, don't do that. We create boundaries for our spouse. Sometimes you have to tell your spouse, don't send that email. Don't yell at the kid. Don't go beat up the neighbor's kid just because he picked on our son. Don't go to tell the principal off. Wait, let's think about it. Maybe you don't want to talk that way to the principal. We give one another, one of our jobs is to create boundaries for one another. And we need that. Let's take another example that's not chinuch. Sometimes there are parents who nag. There can be parents who someone's husband has one job, he's looking for another job, and the parents call every other day and say, has he found something better yet? Has your husband finally... It's not their job. And sometimes you have to set a boundary and say, excuse me, if you can't talk positively about my husband, you can't talk about him. Have you bought a house yet? Are you on birth control yet? Excuse me. You guys shouldn't be talking to me about that. We have a job. We set boundaries. And if we don't set boundaries, then people barge into our life. And we have a responsibility. If parents are going to constantly nag, so are you leaving the settlements yet? Look, they can express their opinion, but it's our job to set a certain boundary and say, you have something to say, I heard it, and you can't continue with this. We set boundaries in our relationships. I believe that one of the boundaries parents should set for their kids is that they cannot hit their parents. There has to be an understanding. Ima is not your friend. Ima is Ima. You don't hit Ima. So I'm not talking about when the child is one, but I am talking when the child is two. At what point between one and two, you'll figure it out when the child has enough intelligence, but at some point the child has to understand no. So this doesn't have to be a boundary when the child is two. What you can do is two things. There's a rule, and it's an important rule. When children are young, there's a reason that Hashem made us stronger. Okay? There's a reason Hashem made us stronger. We don't always have to discuss everything. And if a child's coming to hit you, so don't do a karate chop and hurt his hand. No. Okay? That's not... you can take his hand and say, do tovat ima, which is a very good tool. Here we're not talking about a boundary. It's a very good tool to... He's about to do something, and you tell him, okay, now you let him caress your hand, and now you just taught the child that he can do something else to Ima. And then the next time he comes to hit, it's not a bad idea to say, you remember you're not going to hit Ima. You want to do Tovah to Ima? You will find that maybe 50% of the time the kid will change his mind and do Tovah, because he knows he's going to get a positive reaction to that. And even if not, then you could see him standing there. Now, if you haven't experienced it yet, children will do this. They're going to stand right next to you like this. And they're waiting. And at this point, you have to give them koach. You could stand there and say, no, don't hit. Or you could say, kol hakavod to you that you're not hitting Ima. What a good boy. And you could even reward him for that. You've just given him positive reinforcement for holding himself back from hitting Ima. You've just made a breakthrough. If you stand there and now you're going to say, this is the boundary, you're not allowed to hit. No, 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 don't. You didn't help him. And he's going to test you on it. I say he, it doesn't matter. Girls are just as, at this age it's the same. But they're going to test you on it, and that's normal. There's a line that parents have to learn when to use, but have to use. And that's the line, we don't do that. Okay? We don't have to go into reasons why. The line, we don't do that, is telling the child, this is something that's just not done. So we started discussing a little bit about boundaries. I want to summarize what we discussed so far before we move forward. We began by discussing why we don't like discipline. Everyone wants to be loving and be loved. Everyone wants to be giving. We want to avoid conflict. But even though conflict is hard for us, there have to be boundaries set. Boundaries are frameworks. Every relationship has frameworks. There are things you don't want your boss to ask you for. There are things you don't want your spouse to do, or you don't want them to do without discussing with you. And in the parent-child relationship, there has to be a framework in which the child understands that when it comes to the framework, he must listen. You don't want to find yourself in a situation where the child thinks it's legitimate that you said something and the child said no. And meaning there has to be a framework within which the child understands there's a range of behavior. They ask me to clean my room. I'm going to clean two things and see if I can get away with it. I don't think children really think it through that much. I don't think they think, I'll do two things and we'll see if they notice. I think they walk into their room, they see two things, they do it, and then okay, I did it, and they move on. I don't think there's real malicious intent. But at any rate, we want a framework. Framework is not the regular chinuch we're doing. Framework is the boundaries. And there have to be boundaries. And the reaction when a boundary is crossed is different than the reaction in regular chinuch. So when we set boundaries, one of the concepts children have to understand is, because I am the ima, that's a reason that you have to listen. It's not about understanding, it's because you have to work with that. We said that in order for mothers especially to set boundaries, mothers have to come to recognition that there is a need for boundaries. In every relationship, we set up boundaries. We limit our parents in the relationship, we limit our spouses in the relationship, and we have to know that we have to limit our children. There has to be a framework. There have to be red lines that you can't cross. And we teach that to the children by our reaction. And the red line could be, I'll tell you, I know a family where one kid got upset at his brother. So he went and he took the biggest knife the parents had in the kitchen drawer. He went and he took this big, you know, watermelon knife, and he went after his brother. So he was all of 6, 7. He didn't know what he was doing. But the parents' reaction had to be a reaction that says, not a bad kid, a normal kid. But the reaction had to be one that doesn't happen when Abba and Ima are out of the house, right? That time they saw it. But there has to be a reaction to a six-year-old, you don't do that. You're upset at your brother, don't go after him with a kitchen knife, right? So there are boundaries we set up, and they have to be there. We said one of the lines that we use when we set a boundary is the term, we don't do that. And before we move on, I want to give a mashal from adult life. When students leave us at Machon Meir, so we have students, sometimes they go to university. And sometimes they're leaving our environment for an environment that's completely secular. They're going to be surrounded by non-Jewish men, non-Jewish women. They're going to be in places where it's not clear if they're going to keep Shabbos. Forget learning. I mean, it's really not clear how they're going to hold on when they go. So there are a few things that I tell the students before they go. And one of the things I tell them is, this is a tip that one of our students told me. Set yourself a red line. Tell yourself, I'm going to strive for A. I hope I'm going to achieve B. But set yourself a red line that you tell yourself, I can't fall from that red line. So for one student, the red line is, I'm not going to miss a day without davening. For another student, the red line is, I'm not going to be Mechal Shabbos. For a third student, the red line is, I'm not going to date a non-Jewish girl. For a fourth student, it is, I'm not going to eat non-kosher. What that red line is, each student defines for themselves. But students have told me that by defining a red line before they leave the Machon, they were able to hold themselves where they always believed. I always say, make the red line really low, right? But when you see you're approaching that red line, that's the time to pick up and move out. You realize you're about to lose your identity. So red lines are important in life. And when we speak about boundaries that we're going to establish for our kids in the home, we cannot confuse regular chinuch with boundaries. There's regular chinuch and there's discipline, and then there are boundaries. When it comes to boundaries, you have to win. If you're not going to win, don't set it up as a boundary. Don't enter the situation. Now, parents sometimes think that they're going to set a boundary by yelling. Well, what happens if the parent finds himself yelling a lot? Then they're not setting boundaries. It's not working. Parents sometimes say, I'm a big believer that you're not supposed to hit, except for when you are. Okay, how often do you find yourself hitting? If you find yourself hitting often, then you've just taken a tool, which should be for an extreme situation. And even there, it's not so clear that it's a good tool to use. There's a machlokas among educators whether our generation should use that at all or not. But you just found yourself using that as a regular chinuch tool. That's not right. When a person finds themselves using things that should be left for the extreme all the time, then what you have to say is, okay, this is part of my chinuch repertoire. This is not about boundaries. No one can say that they have to hit their kids 3 times a week. No. I think even those who will believe that hitting has to be within educating a child, if a parent in a lifetime of a kid hit the kid more than 15 times, to my mind, they shouldn't have hit him once. And I would rather say 10 times. I would rather say, I don't know that a parent should ever reach a point where they hit a child 10 times in their lifetime. And that's going with the opinions that that's a legitimate use of chinuch. Hitting could never be out of anger. Hitting could never be out of control. Hitting could never be without knowing that this is the best thing for the child right now. I'll give you a story from a cheder that hit. There was a child I taught who was a yasum. And he wasn't getting along in the school he was learning in. So they decided he has to shift. The school psychologist said they're not going to succeed here. You better shift schools. So we searched, and the child was very talented. And the decision was to send him to Zilberman in the old city. Okay. So I brought him to the interview. He was at the time with this big kippah struga, and in Zilberman, God forbid, they won't let you in with a kippah struga. So he had to go buy a black yarmulke. Very good. You know, there are important things in life. He goes to the interview, and they accept him. And the first year is a smashing success, and the second year begins, and the Rebbe calls me up. He says, the boy doesn't have a father, I'm calling you. The kid is being chutzpedik, and I have to hit him. So I said, oh. I said, do you hit with a stick or with your hand? Like, what are we talking about? He said to me, I need to hit the child, and I'm going to teach him what Derech Eretz is, but I'm not going to do it unless I have coordination with the mother. I said, what do you mean? He says, there have to be 2 things. I want you to ask the mother, is the timing right? Is it okay for the child to hit him now? And I want you to ask the mother, if I'm going to be tough with him in school, will she be kind with him at home? He cannot have a situation where at home they're tough with him and in school they're tough with him. And I will only do it when the mother approves. When she tells me, yeah, the child is ready, the timing is right, and the child, he said she has to be all sweetness at home. And even if he's chutzpahdik at home, she can't fight it at home when I'm fighting it in cheder. She has to tell me when. Okay, I call up the mother, and the mother says to me, now the mother was a principal of more than one school. She had built schools, so she was a person of chinuch. So the almana tells me, she says, in 1 week is her husband's yard site. She says, the boy has a very hard time now around his father's yard site. It's not the right timing. Tell the Rebbe to wait. Now we're dealing with Elul, meaning the year just began. And the Rebbe sees that he has a chinuch problem with this boy. But the mother says, wait till after Sukkos. So I asked myself if it was a ploy. I didn't know if she was for real or not. But I had to play along, right? So I call back the Rebbe and I say, the mother says the Yahrzeit is now. And for a week beforehand and a week afterwards, she says it's not the right timing. You have to wait. So the Rebbe says, good, I'm happy you called. Perfect, we're waiting till after Sukkos. So I was very surprised because it taught me how pure he was in his chinuch. He wasn't going to hit the child out of anger. He was going to do it very calculated. And when the mother says it's not right for the kid now, he says, okay, no problem. We're going to wait. I'm going to deal with the chutzpah the rest of the year until after Sukkot. And then I wanted to see what would happen. So Sukkot passes, and he calls me. And he says, call the mother again and find out, yes or no. I was impressed. You can agree or disagree with the system, but at least I saw there was a system. This wasn't the person who was just going to hit the kid. This was a person who said, I have a repertoire of tools. This is one of them that I believe in. If the mother approves, if we're ready for it, I'll do it. And if not, not. And at that point, the mother said he should do whatever he understands. And the kid till today tells me that he has appreciation for that Rebbe. That Rebbe taught him how to be a mensch. I'm not coming to say hitting is right. Don't get the wrong idea from what I'm saying. Because I'm not. I am saying that the only time such a tool can be considered is when you know for sure that you're thought out. You know that you're doing it because that's what's right for the kid now. You know that you're doing it not because you don't have patience, but because this warrants it. So when we speak about setting boundaries, a person has to ask themselves, have I been trying to set boundaries? Have I been punishing a lot? Have I been yelling a lot? Have I been hitting a lot? If we find that we've been doing this a lot, then that means we're not succeeding. Okay, let's come to a realization. If I've been doing this a lot, then I haven't set a boundary. Then I've been failing to set a boundary. I've been trying unsuccessfully. And at that point, I think people have to take a step back and stop all chinuch that's harsh. At that point, people have to say, let's start again. And let's start with an attempt to accomplish with love and sweetness. Very often, parents feel challenged by children. And I say very often, I mean about 10 times a day by each child. Parents feel like the child is purposely challenging them, when in fact, a lot of what we want to accomplish in chinuch doesn't have to be accomplished the tough way. The fact that we're talking about setting up boundaries automatically resonates with the idea, okay, we're going to learn how to be tough, we're going to learn how to say no, we're going to learn how to limit things, and that's true, that's part of setting boundaries. But we have to first ask ourselves, where do I need those boundaries? Maybe I can accomplish a lot of what I want to accomplish a different way. And one of the questions I'm going to leave you with is, what tools are you willing to use for setting boundaries? There are parents who yell all the time. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I would call it styles in chinuch. Then there are parents who don't yell. The parents who don't yell, when they do yell, so then the children get very scared. They have a tool that can be used to set a boundary. A parent who finds themselves yelling often, if that's part of their style, so then yelling is not a tool for setting a boundary. And realize that to the child who hears yelling all the time, yelling is just another time that you're speaking. So sometimes you speak in this tone and sometimes in that tone, and yelling loses its impact. It makes the parent hoarse. It sometimes gets the parent more uptight because they've changed their own equilibrium. But what you have to ask yourself as we're going to approach the question of setting boundaries is, what tools are you willing to use? Is yelling a tool, or is it part of the house? Is punishing a tool, or is that part of the house? What tools am I going to use? The principle we're going to work with is that on boundaries, you can't lose. You have to win. Boundaries have to be something where, at the end of the day, you won the fight. If you're not going to win, don't enter it. But if you believe that this has to be a boundary, then you have to accomplish it. So point one is, realize that if you've been using harsh tactics and you haven't accomplished, so then stop all the harsh tactics and try to accomplish the same thing with love. Step two. I had, unfortunately, I had one student who committed suicide. I had more than one student, it seems, who committed suicide. One of the students who committed suicide was one of the people who jumped off the Empire State Building. And it's interesting to me till today that he committed suicide, because he was one of the most brilliant students I ever had. He was in the first class I ever taught, and first class in a classroom setting. And what was interesting was that his parents are wonderful people. And so you look at a guy who grew up in what seems to be a wonderful home, and he was a wonderful student, very, very smart and successful, and you ask yourself, what's going on? And here I'm going to pause the recording, because if it's recorded, I can't know if it's going on, and I can't. You'll have to fill this in. One day, a man comes over to me, and he brings his grandson with him. So he says, I have a very serious question to ask you, and I need you to take me seriously and answer me seriously. Okay, what's your question? So he says, this is my grandson, and he's been coming to shul often, and I need you to tell him, are you God? So I held a straight face. I didn't. I almost burst out laughing, but I didn't. I looked at the child in all seriousness, and I said, I am not Hashem. So the child looks at me and says, are you sure? So I said, yeah, I'm very sure. I walked away, so the grandfather looks at the grandson and says to him, did you understand? So the kid says, I think so. And you see, he's thinking. It's like, this didn't sit well with him. And then I said to the kid, Hashem's up there. He's watching over all of us. He's also watching over me. So the kid was like, okay. And you could see he still has to think about it. And I left, and they left. And I the whole way home, I was like trying to think, how did that happen? But then it happened the second time. And when it happened the second time, not with the same kid, then I realized something very interesting. Children want to have heroes. Children want to know there's a bad guy and there's a good guy. Children want to know, who are my heroes? So when a child comes to shul, and you talk to him about the rabbi, and he's sitting up there, I had 3 weeks ago, one of the children came and said, can I ask you a question? So Shir had just ended, the English speaker Shir. So I said, sure. So he looks at me in all innocence, and he says, why is everyone davening to you? So I said, they're not supposed to. So he goes, then why are we all facing that way and you're facing this way? So I sat down with him and I opened the tour with him, and I showed him where it says in the halacha, the minhag, and where the minhag comes from and why the minhag is so. And we learned it. And what these stories taught me is that children want to have heroes. They're not exactly sure how to have heroes, but it gives them a lot of comfort to know there's someone who I look up to. So they're not exactly sure how to look up to him. So it can get confused, and it's important to straighten that out. But when we teach our children, we want to teach them there's a right and there's a wrong. There are good people, there are bad people. We might get annoyed when a child tells us, I hear that all the people who don't wear yarmulkes are goyim. Okay, so we're going to have to explain to them that it doesn't really work that way. But that doesn't mean that it's a bad thing that a child tries to arrange in their own mind, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, who's my hero, and who's not my hero. And when I look back, when we're talking about setting up boundaries, we're talking about doing something that's going to give a child a sense of confidence. Children want to know there's good and bad. Children see the world as black and white. It takes a long time for children to start understanding there's a concept of gray. And the point we're going to end with, before we go over to questions, what's the time? I didn't bring a watch.
5:09.
Okay. So we're on time. Before we go over to questions, before you're going to start setting a boundary, ask yourself, is the timing right? Is this the time I should be setting this boundary for the child? That's the story of the Yosom, where the Rebbe from Zilberman calls me up and says, I have to set limits in my classroom. Is it the right timing for the child? And here are a few examples. If you just made Aliyah, if you just moved, if you just had a baby, your child just underwent a whole change in their life. And it's not the time to set up new boundaries. The child needs your love. They don't need your limits. You have the rest of life to set up boundaries. Right now, the child needs your love. If you just lost a job, if you just had to move, if, God forbid, you just lost a loved one or had some kind of extreme stress in your life, you might not be in the balanced state you want to be to set up the boundary. It could be that you're going to be way too tough with the child. So we have to understand where we're holding and where the child is holding before we enter this whole concept of setting boundaries. It's important, and the two points we just discussed don't conflict. It is important for children, and as we discussed, chinuch is long-term. And it could be that right now is not the right timing to do this with the child. So there were interesting questions. It's a good idea to send in questions if you have them now, because you might forget them within 4 weeks, 3 weeks, and I think they make the class a lot more realistic and less theoretical. So someone asked the following question. Maybe I'll make it a separate recording.